This is East Carolina All-American Bryant Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective.
Welcome into a very special edition of the Sports Objective as we are previewing the Charlottesville Regional. Bubba, I can't believe just a couple days away, and we'll be getting ready for where is the season going? But we're getting ready for a regional. I can't believe it.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe it's that time again. It doesn't seem like it's been nearly a year since that 6th Super Regional, but very excited. Despite not hosting, like Coach Godwin's told us, you know, it's not going to happen every year as badly as we want it to. We're certainly spoiled as Pirate fans with the success the program has had over the last several seasons. Right now, very excited to dive into Friday night's matchup with the national runner-up from 2022, and that is, of course, the Oklahoma Sooners. And to do that, we'd like to welcome in from the Oklahoma Baseball Experience, Brandon Schultz. Brandon, we appreciate your time.
No, thank you all for having me. And Bubba, we kind of swapped podcasts for a couple of nights here. We're thankful to have you on our program as well. And I got to say, you got the Guns N' Roses intro here. You're getting a little hyped up. It's very nice.
Yeah, the outfield is called at Clark LeClair Stadium. Brandon, is called the Jungle. And so you'll hear that song a lot at Clark LeClair. And So Bubba does a nice job with the music and producing the show. But wanted to have you on. I know that Coach Godwin said right after the selection show was over, he has a lot of respect for your coach, Coach Skip, and he mentioned that. And he mentioned the fact that, which is very true, every single team in this tournament, all 64, are good teams or they wouldn't be here. There's what, guys? Y'all are the stats guys. I think it's 300 teams in college baseball, so only 64 make it. And I'm really excited about this regional, even if you take away from the fact that we're talking about our game Friday night, obviously, but two of the four teams. But I think all four teams is going to be exciting. It's going to be, from a college baseball perspective, I think the committee overall, I think they did a really good job with the matchups. There's a lot of fun things that we can look at over the next couple of days as we're getting ready for the regional. But I just want to get your take on that, Brandon. What are your thoughts on the East Carolina matchup and maybe about the regional itself?
Yeah, no, I mean, going back to what you said about Skip, I mean, he's an Augie Garrido. I'm sure, you know, you all know who Augie is. Famous videos for his rants, of course. That's how most people know him. But, you know, Cal Fullerton and Texas, a ton of national championships, one of the most well-known college baseball coaches that there would be if you were to bring up college baseball. But he was his pitching coach at Texas. I mean, well-respected around the game, like you said, has MLB guys. Kershaw comes and works with Skip in off seasons and other MLB guys. So, it's cool to hear. It's cool to have a coach like Skip Johnson at your program where he's a well-respected name and honestly an even better coach and an even better guy. I mean, you talk about someone who just, you know, we'll have players on and we'll ask them, you know, what's Skip saying? You know, what was Skip saying? Was he even paying attention when it came time for selection? So, and yeah, he legitimately doesn't care about that stuff. He's all about developing players. And it's not fake when people are like, we weren't paying attention to the rankings. He actually probably wasn't. I mean, he cares about developing players. And that sort of thing. But no, I think first and foremost, when we're talking about this weekend, I think we're just happy to be in. I mean, second to last team in the tournament. Obviously, after last year, a heck of a ride, making it to Omaha and then making it to the final. And so this year we knew losing, 11 guys to the draft, one more was undrafted free agent. So we lost 12 guys. You could really say they were 12 starters, And so having to revamp pretty much the whole ball club, we didn't really know what we were going to expect this year, but it's been an up and down year. RPI was great for us. Some of the losses we had were not so great. Conference record wasn't so great, but we're happy to be in the tournament. And, you know, it's a team that can certainly make a run, but there's a lot of good competition around this tournament. So
before we dive into the OU roster and then this matchup between the Pirates and Sooners on Friday up in Davenport Field in Charlottesville, just tell our viewers and listeners about your background, your love of Oklahoma Sooner baseball, and then what you do with the Oklahoma baseball experience. And you guys have an awesome intro as well that I believe what the voice of the Sooners put together for you guys.
Yeah, no, we had very fortunate. I mean, and I don't know how this is at every school. I know most schools are pretty much the same where you'll have your main voice of the school. Toby Rowland is ours. He does football, obviously. You know, that's, you're talking about a guy that's, you know, on Saturday probably got 100,000 people listening in. He does basketball and then he does baseball, but he really loves baseball. Like, he really truly loves the game of baseball. It's certainly his, as well as he does at all the other sports, you know, he is a big proponent of the program. And he was kind enough to do that intro for us, which we were really pumped about. So we started with, I've always loved college baseball. I grew up in Tulsa. I actually grew up going to Oral Roberts University baseball games, which y'all know who Oral Roberts is probably because mid-majors, I mean, us mid-majors have got to stick together and fight the power sometimes. But I grew up going there, grew up as a huge OU fan as well. But of course, them being across the state, it was easier to go to some games in Tulsa. So grew up an OU, huge OU fan, huge ORU fan, huge college baseball fan. And so, you know, it's like I said, it's cool that there's other programs that have a following in college baseball and podcasts like you all. We started our Twitter spaces last year in early January and had a lot of interest in that. And then, of course, the team goes on that kind of magical run and it continued to grow. And, this year we decided to go ahead and go full podcast. And so that's kind of where we're at right now. And it's just, you know, taking one step at a time. You know, you guys have been doing this for 5 years now, so you know how that goes. You start and then you adjust and you add on, and every year things get a little bit easier. So you add something new on. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. We started, as people know there, Brandon, we had to start by recording our show via phone and then releasing it that way as a podcast. And, you know, the quality wasn't the greatest like we wanted, but we, at the time, we had three guys in three different towns across North Carolina. So we had to do the best we could until Bubba, one of the only good things that happened during the time of COVID was Bubba found StreamYard here where we could stream it on Facebook and YouTube. And that really, over the last, it's been April of 2020. So the last 3 years we've had, the quality has been so much better. But you have to, like I said at the very beginning of the podcast, you have to start somewhere. And so we're really proud of, I know probably people thought when we started, we were the very first podcast, as Bubba can tell you, for the Pirates. And now there's a lot more, but we were the first. And so it's something to be said for that. We were not obviously early on in the podcasting days, but as far as East Carolina, we were very early on.
Yeah. And before we really dive into this matchup, what the Oklahoma Sooners bring to the table, because like you said, it is a much different team than the one a season ago. You mentioned that word or that expression, mid-major. How ridiculous is it, Brandon, that you have programs, be it in East Carolina, who's hoping this year to maybe advance to a four straight super regional, going way back to 2019, and then you obviously had back in 2016, the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers won the national title, and Southern Miss has hosted on several occasions, has been to Omaha Louisiana, has been to Omaha. Obviously, you have other stories like Stony Brook, Kent State. So that's something I know I'm sure the fan bases at those schools would agree that that's something, you know, that the media came up with, you know, going back to football. And that's something that, you know, kind of like with that term P5 and G5. And I know as Pirate fans, we just absolutely hate it.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing about the sport. And I mean, you know, I don't feel like, you know, basketball, I feel like basketball and college baseball are tied fairly similarly with RPI, and you got mid majors that do well. And that, you know, it's like that term, you know, I think it's one of those, I've always thought as a, you know, as a fan of a mid major school, that it's kind of fun to be the underdog sometimes. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's cool to have a team, you know, when OU has been on runs and historically that, you know, they can kind of bully people around. It's a lot of fun too, but you know, it's kind of fun being an underdog or thought of as an underdog school compared to some of the larger power conferences. And you go in there and you know, sometimes, you know, there's been big wins against, you know, OSU this year. And then there's been big wins against Arkansas and, you know, that gets a lot of publicity. So I think it's kind of fun, but I totally get it. I often wonder how long it's going to take before the landscape of college baseball adjusts. But I think that's in all of college sports. I think everyone can kind of feel it coming.
Yeah. And for me there, Brandon, the thing is the program, like Bubba was saying, is a top 10, top 15 program perennially. I mean, it's not like they just like draw names out of a hat and say, okay, right, Carolina's going to be 15 this year or 10 this year. And so I think that's the frustration that our fan base has with that term mid-major, because for us, a mid-major would be like, I don't want to throw out schools, but there are other schools around the area and the region in the Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina area that would fit maybe that label. But we have 30,000 students.
Yeah.
I want to make that very clear to people. We're not a small college or university, and there's small universities that you hear, you know, talk about how they're a big time program, and I understand maybe an individual sport, but when it comes to East Carolina and baseball, and also I feel like with baseball, it's more of a tight knit community. As far as the baseball programs, I think the baseball coaches as a whole respect the media a lot when it comes to maybe not every single coach. I don't know. I can't speak for every single coach, but our experience has been the baseball coaches have been extremely accessible. They have treated us very well. Not that the other coaches for other sports don't, but there's something magical or special about the, say, for example, in North Carolina, in the state, we have 18 Division I programs. We didn't this year, but most of the time we put together a, Bubba is amazing with this, a preview of the 18 schools. And
wow,
they come on and they talk to us and they thank us for what we're doing for college baseball. I know that's coach speak to a point, but we don't get that from the other sports in that regard.
Well, that's the thing, that they appreciate the coverage of, because, you know, not every baseball program is like in East Carolina or NC State or some of the other teams within the state. And like you said, I won't say any names, but, you know, those programs, you could tell they genuinely appreciated somebody covering their program.
Well, I was on a TCU podcast. I would agree with you. Yeah, I would totally agree with you in the fact that college baseball is a more close-knit community, more accessible. We have players on pretty much every week from the team. There's no other major college sport that would have a player come on a fan podcast, you know. But I think that goes to the fact that, you know, in all reality, college baseball is not one of the most followed. It's third most followed sport, you know, behind football and basketball. But I do think it's growing. I really do. And I do think that, you know, there is going to be more of a a market for, you know, your all's podcast and our podcast and eventually as the sport continues to grow and interest continues to grow. So I love it. I love college baseball. I hope it continues to grow. I would watch any college baseball game of any team playing anywhere. I don't care. I think it's fun. I love college sports and I love baseball. So I would watch any team anywhere. So I'm a big proponent of the sport.
Yeah, I had Bubba, by the way, I had a sidebar for you real quick, Brandon. So national media was talking about NIL, and they were talking about, of course, the great run of the great program you have softball-wise with Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about, this was just fascinating. Help me out on this because you're an Oklahoma guy. And they were talking about there's more – I forgot to tell you about this, Bubba. There's more NIL money for the softball program than the baseball program. And I just found that I understand how big the program is with softball. Don't get me wrong. So I'm not disrespecting the softball program at all. But I just thought that was kind of interesting. I thought there would be more. You would think it would be the other way around, that there would be more for the baseball. But that's one of the things that I hope for not only our baseball program, but baseball and college as a whole, is that we'll get more money for our baseball players. Maybe I'm a big baseball fan, so I'm biased, but I think there's a lot to be had there to help our individual programs out.
Yeah, I would go further than that and tell you that in all reality, I believe our women's basketball team and track team has more NIL money than our baseball team. So yes, like it, and that is something that myself and Johnny are working, you know, when we talk about next steps, you know, that's something that we're working towards. How can we, you know, do that? I think part of it with college baseball is, I don't know. I just feel like college baseball is a little bit older minded at times, and it's hard for coaches or programs to grasp onto the NIL as quickly as some of the other programs do. But I also think NIL's got to get fixed in some capacity at some point. And I don't, obviously you play with what you have right now and NIL is a big deal, but you know, the thing we really don't want to have happen, I feel like, and you all may have a different opinion on this than me, in the future is, you know, we don't want a donor to become a owner of a baseball program. And I feel like that's what you have at LSU. I call out another school. But that program bought a championship caliber squad. Not to say LSU wouldn't have had a good baseball team. They would have. I mean, it's obvious. It's LSU. It's a great program historically. But, you know, there's a great chance that LSU goes into Omaha and wins the thing. And, you know, if so, they bought a championship. And I just don't want to see college baseball become, you know, it's not a major league program. We shouldn't have donors becoming owners and buying championships.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
You can expect that from Bubba.
That's one of the things in baseball, you're saying that I love it so much, is because of the purity of the college game. And so hopefully, I'm not against NIL, but what NIL has become is certainly not what it was intended to be. And that's what I'm against. Kind of shifting gears, and if you want to, Brandon, we'll take a look at this matchup between the Pirates and Sooners on Friday night, ESPN2, 7 o'clock first pitch in the Charlottesville Regional. So, obviously, we just concluded a Twitter space with Dan Siegel, who's a Virginia beat writer. But give us a thumbnail sketch of the Sooners season. I know you said it's very up to date. You see a 31-26 record. And right there around 500 in the Big 12, you swept Texas, you split a series with the non-conference opponent that's top eight in the tournament in Stanford, but then you also had some kind of puzzling results along the way.
Oh, yeah, totally puzzling at times. I don't know that I'll probably die of a heart attack at 50 because of this season right here. It's just been, you never know in a game, and that's definitely been, I mean, not to say it hasn't been exciting, I mean, you never know what's going to happen. We're going out there and laying an egg in a conference series against a Baylor or K-State, a team that, you know, historically and in all reality this year, we should do well against, and we don't do well against them. And then, you know, oftentimes the very next week or 2 weeks later, like you said, we're sweeping Texas at home when they're hot. I mean, Texas started the year off slow, but then they got on a hot streak, and we kind of beat them when they were hot. And then of course Stanford was good all year, and we go and split that. I think another thing that stands out is the second to last week of the year, we played Dallas Baptist and then two against West Virginia, and we went 2-2 with that. And those were two top 25 teams at the time. And in all reality, we didn't get to start our typical starter on the getaway game because of some rain. And, you know, we ended up trying to do an opener that didn't really work, and that got us off schedule. And then we ended up playing them really close the rest of the game. And so you look at that, and then you go into the Oklahoma State series, and, you know, you lose 2 out of 3 pretty ugly fashion. To be quite honest, outside of a Braden Carmichael complete game shutout. And that's just kind of the season that it was. You know, this team has shown, it's like a thunderstorm. It's flashes of brilliance followed by total darkness. But those flashes of brilliance are so bright that you just get in this mindset of like, you know, this team could actually beat anyone in the country. Stanford is a national seed, top 8. This team can beat anyone in the country, but at the same time, we could also lose anyone in the country. So it's been that kind of a year. I think when you flip your entire roster outside of really 3 players, that's probably going to happen. But it's definitely been a struggle, and it's mostly been on the pitching side. I know you all kind of want to hear about the breakdown of what we've got going. Our offense has been relatively, after the first 2 weeks, has been really relatively stable. We score a lot of runs most games. You're looking at 5 to 7 runs pretty much guaranteed. It's rare when we don't score that many. But it's been the pitching, and it's been late game pitching. And we've also not really ever solidified a week in rotation, which, as you all know, is extremely important, just to know that you can get some length out of guys on the weekend. So that's really been our biggest challenge is pitching, and then some really surprising miscues on defense. We go through spurts of really struggling, throwing the ball around the yard, kind of a deal. So
taking a look at Braden Carmichael, veteran lefty, began his career at a junior college down in Texas. And then obviously now he has the opportunity to play a season with his brother on this Sooners roster. So tell us what makes Braden successful, because you look at his numbers, he's not a high strikeout guy. He's what, a 5'10", 5'11", left-hander. And I would say kind of your, at least from afar, perhaps your stereotypical left-hander. In that he's not a high strikeout guy, kind of a crafty lefty, perhaps would be a good way to describe him. 59 strikeouts in a little over 70 innings, maybe was it 72 or 74 and a third. And one of the things that I noticed is that despite his success and being 7-0, he's allowed the most doubles on the team. And granted, he's pitched more innings than most people, but still seeing 23 doubles was a little eye-opening.
Yeah, he is. He's actually, I mean, Braden Carmichael is a really cool story. I mean, his dad was a catcher at OU. His brother's now at OU. He's a fifth-year guy, so he's now been at OU. He did start at a junior college, but he's been at OU for a long time now. But, I mean, if you go look at his stats over the last few years, I mean, nothing that really jumps off the paper at you, you know. He's a, you know, a guy that kind of has struggled to find a role in his time at OU until this year, and really put it all together. He'll tell you, I mean, we've had him on the show before, and he's certainly told us that kind of this year he's, you know, I think everyone talks about buying in to a program or a coach or a mentality. And I think this year he's really bought in to what Skip has been preaching for a number of years. And I'm sure that comes with maturity. And for some guys, it happens at different times. But he has bought in and, you know, trusted the pitch, trusted his pitching, not worrying, going in and not worrying about results. And that's something that Skip talks about often is, you know, you throw the ball where you're supposed to throw it. And whether they hit it or not, there's nothing you can do about that. You can only control where you throw it. I think he's done that this year. And he's been able to pitch with that confidence. Like you said, a lot of pitchability, a lot of can throw a lot. He can kind of change speeds on you quite a bit. But when you look at it, you know, he's a pitch to contact guy. He wants you to hit the ball. And so he's going to take his lumps a little bit when, and get hit. But because he's trusting it and he's just throwing it where he's supposed to throw it and not trying to throw it somewhere, you know, he's had a lot of ability to get guys out. And it's fun to watch. I mean, it is, I know everyone loves the strikeout and home runs, but it's fun to watch Braden working at bat. So.
Yeah. Very impressive the way, and I know this is something I brought up last night, just looking at the statistics and, when we were discussing this on the Oklahoma Baseball Experience, and definitely encourage our viewers and listeners to go back and check out that interview. We shared it on our social media, but, just seeing that last year in what roughly, you know, 28 to 30 innings, he walked, I want to say 20. And this year in 74 and a third, he's only walked maybe 13.
Yeah. Yeah, it is 13. And I just have to, I would imagine that goes back to, you know, not trying to throw strikes, you know, not trying to place the ball and trusting his stuff more, which, you know, I feel like that's where most guys would be at, you know, and when you're looking at college players, most guys probably just need that maturity or and everyone hits it at a different point where when you start trusting your stuff and just start throwing. Instead of trying to make pitches perfect, and that's what he's done. So it's been a lot of fun to watch. I mean, we would not be where we're at right now without Braden Carmichael. And so I'm pretty excited. One question I was going to have for you all is, when you all face lefty starters, have you struggled, or has it been pretty?
There's mixed bag. It depends. I'm drawing a blank on his name. The Friday night starter for Wichita State obviously played Saturday. I told you the circumstances of that series, but he totally shut us down.
He missed the game of his life.
Yeah, very good arm, but he shut us down. And then there were other lefties who did the same. But then there were other lefties that were quality pitchers that we lit up. And I think it's one of those things that. Despite us being a left-handed dominant lineup, that we, I mean, those left-handed bats are so used to seeing left-handed pitching that obviously the ones with excellent stuff, they're going to be able to shut a lot of people down, whether it's left on right or left on left.
Yeah, I would add to that. I think that I think when you look at our lineup, the one thing that I would say that is no secret, it's not a hot take, is it's about the middle innings that you find that they start scoring runs for the Pirates. So that's one thing. A slow start team, if you will, would be what most people, I think you could argue, and would be fair this year. And then Jacob Starling is a guy that our leadoff hitter, he's the Cliff Godwin is famous for, by the way, Brandon, for changing the lineup. So now that I say Jacob Starling, he'll probably say, I heard the Sports Objective podcast, so we're going to change the lineup. But he's the guy that's the only true right-hander on the team. He plays second base. He's the guy that can go yard. I mean, he's just a long ball guy, and he's the guy that can make that special play. A really great second baseman, and he's a special player. And the guy that I'll just say this: the guy that I'm looking for, the X factor. And I don't know, Bubba, I haven't talked to you off air about this, but the guy that he was hitting very, very well, great player. He got injured. I think it was a UCF series. Would be Jacob Jenkins Coward, JC. Is my X factor. If you see number 3, he's a lefty. Speaking of lefties, he's the guy that has a lot of promise. He's the guy that will be eligible for the draft next year. He's only a sophomore out of Greensboro, North Carolina, and he's a guy that's a really good hitter. And if he he's coming off that injury in April, but if he really starts warming up and his bat is red hot, then that might be a difference maker for the Pirates. But he's the one that I'm looking for as far as the offensive side of the ball. What about you, Bubba?
Yeah, that's a great point. Jacob Jenkins Coward, or JJC, as he's known by Pirate fans. That's what he's a corner outfielder. Last year, he had a stellar season. Really did a lot of great things all year long, but especially the postseason, and had some highlight reel moments against the Longhorns. But yeah, like Dave said, he had an injury that you would certainly not want to see anyone have, and not that you want to see anyone have any type of injury, but you know, he unfortunately fouled a ball off his man parts against the UCF Knights. It was game two of that UCF series, because two games prior he had had a 3-home-run game against NC State. He hit the ball hard at least one or a couple at bats, but didn't have anything to show for it. And his final three at bats of that NC State game, he went yard. And then, two games later, he has that happen. He thought it was just one of those things, you know, that he's going to be able to push through, and remained in the game after talking with the trainer. And then probably 2 or 3 minutes later, while he's on second base, he's like, no, this is more than just a shot to the midsection. So a couple days later, or not even, you know, he had surgery and then returned, I guess, probably 10 days later out at that series at Wichita State.
Wow. That is something. I don't know that I've ever heard that before. So, geez. It's a good –
And one thing with Jenkins Coward that we haven't mentioned, I think I mentioned it with you guys last night, a lot of times in about the seventh or eighth inning, he'll lead the game if he's a corner outfielder, and we'll substitute in Riley Johnson, and Lane Hoover will bump over from center to left, and Riley Johnson will go play center, and then Carter Cunningham in right. Sometimes Luke Nowak had really been a pretty consistent starter, whether it was in left field or at DH, but not so much here the last 3 or 4 games.
And one of the things you guys I know do very well, Brandon, is steal bases and 104 bags. Nowak is probably he's probably the fastest guy on the team. So if you see him, they'll have him, like Bubba said, he's got a very good bat, and he runs the bases extremely well, and he's a guy that would definitely fit in the Sooner lineup as far as stealing bases. He's probably our best guy, I would argue. I don't know if Bubba would, but that's my take.
I would, yeah. I mean, when you talk about OU, I mean, that's the kind of what happened last year, is that chaos mantra that we have, of course, spelled OU instead of just the O. But, you know, we got Reggie Willits from the Yankees. He was a former alumni. I think he was the first base coach with the Yankees. And so he ended up coming on the program last year as a special assistant. And he really kind of helped develop this. I mean, we do try to steal a lot of bags. We have a lot of athletic guys. For crying out loud, our first baseman is our second top base stealer with 21 bags as a first baseman. So he did play a little bit of third this year. So we're just very athletic all the way around. And another, you know, crazy kind of stat about, you know, how athletic as of a team we are, our catcher is leading the team in triples, you know. And so it's just like all the guys on the team are extremely athletic. Most of them you would consider, you know, plus speed. John Spikerman's as dynamic, our center fielder's as dynamic of a player as there is in college baseball. he struggled last year. He didn't play until I don't remember the exact date, about halfway through the year, with some back problems. And then this year to start the year, he was having some of those same issues. But he's really gotten healthy these last 3 weeks, and his average has improved dramatically. He's probably the guy that when you're looking at, you know, OU stat sheet, you know, you're looking at his 265 average and, you know, three home runs and maybe not being that impressed, but he is a guy that can take over, take over a game for sure. So, outfield wise, ton of speed, Madryn, Spikerman, and Kendall Pettis. So really, really quick, really athletic around the field. Like I said, I mean, we're going to score runs. We're going to push the issue. We're going to try and take extra bags. We're going to, you know, send guys home when there's going to be a close play. We're going to make you make plays. But it's really just going to be a matter of how many runs can we keep off the board, because after we get through Braden Carmichael, you know, Jamie Hitt's been pretty solid this year as our number two starter. After that, that, you know, there's really no telling who we would be starting in a game three, four scenario. Our best reliever out of the pen is Carter Campbell. He's another lefty. He's definitely had a really solid year. He's been one of the only guys that would you would say has been trustworthy throughout the whole body of work the whole year. And then after that, you know, you're really piecing it together. There's been guys from the bullpen that have been good at different parts of the year, and some of them have been really good at different parts of the year. But you know, there's really only two or three, four guys in the bullpen that's put together a full year of dependability. So,
yeah, when I was talking to Johnny, Johnny with the Oklahoma baseball experience, for our viewers and listeners, and you'll certainly even hear from him. I'll encourage you to take part in a Twitter space that the Oklahoma baseball experience is having on Thursday night. Brandon, do you know the time of that?
So you all are on the East Coast, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, so that would be 9 o'clock your all's time, 8 o'clock ours. So 8 o'clock, yeah. Central, 9 o'clock.
Okay, and we'll put that on our social media, Pirate Fans, the link to join the Twitter space for the Oklahoma baseball experience. Definitely encourage you to at least listen in, and then you can always request to speak and chime in if you have anything to add to the conversation. But yeah, I'm glad you're talking about chaos and the 109 stolen bases in, you know, East Carolina. I mean, has the luxury of having a couple of quality catchers, and for the most part, it's been Justin Wilcox, and he's thrown out about 20 base stealers this year. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that matchup with him and the OU running game.
Yeah, I am too. It's certainly, you know, it's certainly one of those places where there are times, you know, it's how committed we are to the run game. It's kind of like football, you know, how committed are you going to be to the run game? We have seen situations this year where we have potentially run ourselves out of games. And that was known going into the season that would probably happen, because it's also going to win you a bunch of games too. And so it's really hard. I think last year we got picked off a little bit more than we did this year. So I do feel like we've been a little bit smarter about getting picked off. But sometimes we will push the issue to the point where I think some of the fans are like, let's get a couple of runs ahead first, or at least catch back up when we're only down one or two, instead of running us out of innings. But it's part of it. You know, we always say the chaos giveth and it taketh away. So.
Yeah. East Carolina offensively. And that's something we did not talk that much about with the Twitter space tonight. We do have the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, 74 home runs as a team. I think at least five guys with eight or more, led by first baseman Josh Moreland, who's a junior and has really bounced back after a struggle in 2022. He has right around 300, a little over 300, I think, batting average, and has hit 15 home runs and driven in probably about 60 or more. But when you take a look at the Pirates, it's a very versatile offense. You had a weird stretch there in the middle of the season. Those games that I mentioned at Wichita State, where we only scored 3 runs, got shut out twice. And there was another game where we got shut out in that stretch. So, but outside of that, for the most part, we've been pretty good offensively. Like Dave mentioned, there have been those games where we started slowly. And then, you know, Coach Godwin, he'll fake bunt and steal a lot. He'll, in a 3-0 count, we'll show bunt and then pull the bat back. You know, that would be a good over-under for like a prop bet like you would have for the Super Bowl, is how many times you know, the Pirate batters will show bunt.
Yeah.
And I would say there's no telling. This is probably way low. I'd set it at probably, I don't know, 14.5. I'm gonna keep up with that on Friday to see how many times we choke bunt.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to as well.
Yeah, Bubba. By the way, if you want to bet, you're gonna be able to bet on baseball next year. So maybe they're really close to passing it, where you can bet on your phone, mobile, and they're also going to have it around the state of North Carolina. So the legislature is one thing. There's so many problems in North Carolina, but the one thing they can all agree on is sports betting. So we should have that definitely by the Super Bowl, but it may be as late as this time next year in June, so a year
perhaps,
from now.
Perhaps an NIL opportunity for the former Alabama coach, right?
We had to get an Alabama joke in there. Yeah, I was like, man, you guys might have a new new special assistant on your staff next year somewhere in North Carolina.
And then the whole connection with the father of the Cincinnati player, that was pretty pretty interesting to read some of those articles.
I have not kept up with that story very much in the last couple of weeks, but I cannot wait to see where that one ends up, and once everything has officially all come out, how in the world what happened? I mean, it's definitely interesting.
Especially when you think about after the 2016 run that Cliff Godwin had. Bubba, help me out on this, but I was told, I don't know if this is true, but Cliff Godwin, being a great coach, gets offered, you know, or rumored to be a part of the coaching search at blah, 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 whatever school. But Alabama came calling, and I had heard up to $1 million a year. And he turned him down. Was that right, Bubba? It was way up there, if it's not.
I don't recall the dollar figure. That sounds correct. And that was in 2016, after East Carolina was within 90 feet of Omaha, where we went out to Texas Tech after coming out of the Charlottesville Regional and won game one against the Red Raiders, and then had those opportunities. Hit a ball, hit the backside of the mound, and it ricocheted and shot over towards second base off the bat of Brady Lloyd. Looked like it was headed into center field off the bat, and then it hit the back of the mound and, you know, got him. They threw him out by probably a step or something at first. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Because off the bat, I was like, I raised my hand. I was like, yes, we're going to Omaha finally.
Yeah, it felt like it certainly that. And that particular day in Eastern North Carolina, a sidebar, I was DJing a wedding. It was like 95 degrees. I was sweating, and I literally was listening to our friend, the play-by-play voice at the time, Corey Glore, just trying to keep up with the game, and I'm DJing at the same time. And sweat, 95 degrees outside, at least in Eastern North Carolina. I can't speak for Bubba being in the western part, but it was a really hot day, and I remember that game very, very well. I thought we had it, I'll be honest, with the way that we were playing that day, but some things are not meant to be. But as far as Oklahoma is concerned, I did have a question as far as with SEC dominance again this year. I think it's, 8 host sites. What do you guys feel about as far as – I haven't asked anybody. You hear all the time about basketball and football, but how do you guys feel about moving to the SEC, you guys in Texas?
Yeah, great question. I haven't really been asked that one much from other teams. You know, I think really from a facilities standpoint, we're well behind. We are way, way behind. We're way behind in some aspects in Big 12. So, you know, our renovations are coming to Eldale probably in the next year or two. They'll break ground. So we are starting to, I think it's $45 million renovations. I'm sure it'll end up being more than that throughout the next couple of years. So we're trying to pick that up. Product on the field wise, though, I mean, got to be real honest. I certainly is not trying to sound, you know, overconfident or anything like that, but we've actually done pretty well against the SEC since, you know, the start of the decade. And, we went to the Shriners Classic in 2020, took 2 out of 3 there against Arkansas, Missouri, and LSU. So that, you know, obviously I know that was 2020, but, you know, when you're looking at recency, that's certainly part of it. I know, in 2021, I believe we played Arkansas, either close and won that one, and then Auburn, I know we beat in that year as well. We beat Auburn, last year. Obviously we beat Texas A&M twice to bump them out of Omaha. Early in the year, we beat Auburn. There's a lot of wins against SEC schools over the last, you know, 5 years. And it's not the slouches in the SEC by any means. I mean, we beat Mississippi State this year, 15-9. I get it. They didn't have the best year, but, you know, so I really got to say, I'm not super worried about the SEC. I feel like it's, you know, this year we were very fortunate to make the tournament, in my opinion. I'm super glad we did. Don't get me wrong. The guys put up some big wins. We've already mentioned Texas and Stanford. But, you know, being a 6th or 7th in the conference in the Big 12 usually does not get you into the regionals. Being 6th or 7th in the SEC is a guarantee. So I think we'll do fine. I think there's going to be a learning curve. We're going to have to get used to playing in some absolutely raucous environments. You know, we're going to have to probably get used to them traveling really, really well. SEC travels really, really well. And so there's going to be a good contingent coming to our own ballpark. So we got to get facilities up there, but products down the field wise, I think Skip Johnson's building a really solid program. We have some major recruits coming in. He's already proven that he can work the portal really well by getting guys like Dakota Harris and Bryce Madren, who was the junior college player of the year last year. So, you know, I'm not too worried about the SEC. Am I acting like, oh yeah, we're going to go in there and win it the next 3 years? No. I mean, you know, we're going to have runs just like at, you know, other schools in the SEC do. But I really think we can hold our own.
Yeah, that's something you talk about, the SEC. It's pretty crazy. You mentioned Mississippi State. You know, they won a national championship just a few years ago, I guess a couple years ago. And then, you know, they proceeded to lose 18 straight SEC games. That's unbelievable. And then last year, Ole Miss, you know, snuck into the tournament, got hot, and then – The Rebs won it all, and then this year, you know, well, they have a below 500 season.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why. I mean, I will say, like, for a lot of people, this year has been super disappointing in some aspects. Barely making the tournament was, and it's really the way that we've lost this year that's been kind of challenging and disappointing at times. But when you actually look around, at the teams that were in Omaha last year or went, you know, the other teams that were in the tournament in previous years that went really deep and got gutted by the draft, making a regional this year is actually a really solid thing, really great thing for the program to continue to make postseasons. That's what builds programs. And so we're excited. Of course, someday we hope to aspire to get 4 hosts in a row. That's something that we have not been able to do in a long time, is host a regional. So, you know, I've got to say there's some envy there towards you all hosting that many regionals, but, we're hopeful to get back to that level of the program. So, and also, you know, again, really appreciate you all having me on. Any other thoughts or questions?
I just had one final one for Bubba and our stadium nerds. So can you give us an idea if we came to your ballpark there for you guys for a home game, what's the atmosphere like there? Obviously, we're North Carolina and Oklahoma are not side by side, neighboring states. So it would be a special circumstance that Pirate fans, but what's it like there?
You know, we've had really good turnouts this year. We had the last Bedlam where we played OSU was one of the largest crowd I think we've ever had. I think it would probably surprise you a little bit because it's not crazy. It's not like we're packing 8,000 people in there. It's, 3,500, 4,000. Where we usually sit is the berm, which is the outside part of right field, where we do all of our activities. That's pretty fun. That's a pretty big party out there. I think it would probably surprise you that a team that just made the College World Series finals last year has some definite room to improve their game day experience in crowds. If I'm being completely honest, this is full honesty from a fan. So,
well, you definitely have to come to Greenville, to Clark O'Clair Stadium. In fact, we have a thing the first weekend of March, and that's the Keith LeClair Classic. And we get teams from all over the country. I would love to have you guys come. That'll be a lot of fun. Love for you to see that and hang out. And you guys have to experience the jungle. The outfield is amazing with the atmosphere.
Yeah, this year we had Indiana and Long Beach State and a whole host of teams, like Dave said, over the years.
I would, if I ever make it to North Carolina during a season, I can guarantee you I will be going to an East Carolina game, because I believe me, I am up to speed on all the programs out there and their the fun stuff that they do at their ballparks, and that is certainly one of the tops. So,
I know you've been generous for your time. Can you tell everybody again about the podcast and certainly about how people can follow you guys, like on social media?
Yeah, so podcast is the Oklahoma Baseball Experience. It's anywhere that you can find podcasts, Spotify, iTunes. Just started that up this year. We're about 20 episodes. I know that pales in comparison to 900, but we'll get there eventually, right? By that time, you all will be on, your 5,000th episode. So, it's good. We have a lot of players come on. We have some coaches come on. I know you all spoke about coaching staff being pretty friendly with college baseball. So we do that. Twitter-wise, Schultzy012 is the Twitter handle. You can't miss it. It's got the OU and ORU slash in between it. And then my partner in crime, Johnny Baseball, at Web Dingus, is who you really want to follow. And he's really, in all reality, he is the, as he's said in our intro, the sod father. He is the father of all things Twitter and podcasting and promoting the team at OU. So he's a great guy, great follow. We've been pretty happy to do this the last couple of years.
Sounds good. Good luck to you guys, obviously.
You as well.
And I appreciate you coming on tonight. It'll be interesting to see Pirates and Sooners on Friday night at 7 o'clock. And I think that's the ESPN2 game for the people that are back home in Norman or Greenville. And so you can check that out. Thank you so much. And look forward. Maybe we can meet sometime in person. But good luck to you guys. And we'll talk again very soon.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
All right. Have a great night.
You too.
All right, Bubba, the great show as always. Appreciate Brandon coming on. And we will have all the updates with the regional. And I know we'll have a lot of fun in Charlottesville. Cannot wait. It's going to be outstanding. My kids, Alex and Mackenzie, are going to enjoy it. And I appreciate everything you do for the show, and it's going to be, we'll see how it goes. It's one of those things we're not used to. It's been a while, 2016 in Charlottesville, the last time the Pirates were on the road, and we'll see how it goes. I know you're on vacation, so I'll let you get back to that, and we'll get it out of here, folks. Appreciate it very much, and you can follow us right. Bubba, before we get out of here, we'll tell everybody about our YouTube channel and social media, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll certainly plug our social media platforms. Like Dave said, subscribe on YouTube as we're approaching 900 subscribers. Definitely like and follow on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at esportsobj, and then on Instagram and TikTok, it's at the Sports Objective. And then if you have any questions that you would like us to ask to a guest, or just about the podcast in general, anything like that at all, maybe a potential guest that you would like for us to have on, or like I said, anything concerning the Sports Objective, reach out to us at thesportsobj@gmail.com.
All right. We appreciate all the support of our viewers and listeners. Thanks so much for Brandy coming on with Oklahoma, the Oklahoma baseball experience. And good luck to them. A great show, and appreciate their support during this Charlottesville regional preview. Appreciate Brandon coming on. All right, we'll get out of here. Good luck to the Pirates, and we'll be talking to you very soon. And thank you, Bubba, very much. I'm Dave Richmond, and as always, good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Why not copy that? Everybody in the stands go bananas. Scream loud, baby, don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get it all, get the wave going.